Final seconds of the game. A chance to score, and the chance has gone begging. If your business's commerce platform keeps missing the target on golden opportunities, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool that you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system or you're vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code PLAY100. That's code PLAY100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Ranks squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favorite football podcast, back for another week, and today we're going to be talking about the race for the European Golden Boot, or Golden Shoe if you prefer. We're going to be discussing all the contenders, the way that the competition works, and who might be lifting that little gold trophy at the end of the season. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today, and joining me is our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. Thank you. Race for the Golden Boot, race towards Christmas in this house. My birthday out the way. Dylan's birthday now out the way. And all talk has turned to Santa. The big man is
one,
high on the
one present done for Dylan, another one on the way.
So hard having a. Never really appreciated it when I was a kid, like my parents had to like deal with this. And now that I'm having to deal with having birthday to buy for so close to Christmas and figuring out what you get for them when is extremely annoying. But he got a Messi Inter Miami kit the weekend, and he didn't take it off for 2 days. Wore it literally constantly, refused to take it off, wanted to wear it to school on Monday. No, you can't do that, mate. We also need to wash this thing, you stink. So it's all gone well, mate, and now we're counting down towards a big day.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It is that, isn't it? I thought about this a little bit sometimes when, you know, I'm a birthday in February, you're a birthday in December. My brother is bang in the middle of July.
And yeah, I was saying, same as Taylor.
That's great. You get 6 months present, 6 months present. You don't get them all in one big clump and then have to wait for summer. So
it really is.
Advantages
and
disadvantages.
Totally, yeah. A couple of friends of ours have got babies born on Christmas Day, and I'm like, you'd have to move it. It'd be like, officially, that's my birthday, but I'm going to move it.
Weirdly, though, that one's a little bit different in that that actually might be the worst day because they would just be like, we're just lumping your presents together.
That's exactly what they'll do.
100%.
Yeah, exactly.
That might be the worst day to have a birthday.
Yeah, you have to shift it to June or July so that you can properly be celebrated. Anyway,
your half birthdays.
yeah. This is not what this podcast is about, but you're all welcome here. Just also to shout out me, because everyone that listens to the Patreon, and if you're not on Patreon, please feel free to come over. It's a great time to hop on board and take up your free trial and then stay for life because it's great. We do a show called Pick 11, where each week at the end of the show, we both pick two bets for the weekend and we basically get 11 coins, 10 on our big bet and one coin on an outsider. And for the first time this season, I've actually come in with both coins winning, both sets of coins, I should say. Everton beating Chelsea, Girona beating Barcelona. Two amazing predictions from the guru himself. I mean, come on, give me some praise here.
You get loads of praise. It would be more praise and there would be plenty more of it if you weren't about 100 coins behind both the patrons and
mate,
us. So,
yeah, I mean, unless the people are listening to Patreon, they don't know that, so they don't need to know. So if you want to hear more about that, you know where to go.
You know where to
find us. Description below.
Yeah, the link's in the description. It is a good time to come and join the Patreon, especially ahead of the January window where Dean is going to be heading up,
up
on all the different transfer bits that you need to know. There's loads of fun over there. So please do come and check it out. Let's start with things we love, shall we, DJ? What have you got for me this week?
Some people won't love this, but in an episode where we're celebrating goal scorers, mate, this seems very, very apt. And actually, I do kind of love it. Cristiano Ronaldo has just scored his 50th goal of 2023 as Al Nassr won in the semi-finals of the Saudi King Cup against Al-Shabaab. Now, obviously, when you dress it up as that, it doesn't sound like the greatest feat in the world. But bear in mind, mate, in just over a year's time, this guy is going to be turning 40, right? Bear in mind, his thing in life is that he is the star. He scores goals. He is the man. Well, fair play to him, because he made a choice that is fitting with what his identity is. And he's gone over there and he is absolutely smashing it. So for this season, he's got 26 goals. Obviously, like, you count his goals as well for Portugal across this year. I'm not going to, like, suddenly come out and say the Saudi Pro League is great and I watch all of his matches, because I don't. But I have made a point of watching all of his goals to talk about it here. And yes, there are a fair few pens in there. Yes, there are a fair few tap-ins slash horrendous goalkeeping moments. But there's also some proper Ronaldo stuff in there. There's a couple of really nice free kicks that, like, he's still serving those up occasionally. He's still serving up some of those strikes that go across goal into the corner that he's become like a trademark of his. And he's also just played his 1,200th professional match. This guy is an absolute machine, and love him or hate him, mate, like, for our era, through our lifetime, you won't really see anything like this again. And I'm so glad we've lived through it. I'm so glad we've experienced it. And as I say, like, even if you have hated Ronaldo since the moment you started watching him, he's brought something to your life that you just cannot deny. Whether that's a level of hatred, fine, but you've seen some stuff in football in terms you wouldn't have seen any other lifetime. Yeah, you'd have seen other icons. But Ronaldo is his own man. No one's ever played football like this before. And given the ego, given the stature, given his physique, he's a special man. And I just feel that, like, this is a moment he does deserve some love. 50 goals in 2023, 1,200 professional appearances. Take some to him, mate.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think that's ever up for debate. And I also don't think that there's ever debate that he is up there in the echelons of the greats. That's never been the question, I don't think. I think the debates around him and Messi often led to people deciding that one or the other were in some ways not worthy of the achievements because they preferred their rival. And that doesn't take away from wherever you sit on it, both of them being up with the greatest players that have ever played the game. And you know my feelings on this. You know that I've been a Leo Messi man for my entire life. I think he's the greatest footballer ever to have walked the earth. But I don't think that that takes away from what Ronaldo has done, and the fact that he has been a phenomenal player, phenomenal goal scorer in the latter end of his career, the way he's changed himself from his early kind of styles to a very different kind of tank number nine, if you will. And I think what we've seen this year, in particularly in national duty, is a sense that he's being able to adapt a little bit more. And, you know, credit to Roberto Martinez as well for this, that he looks much more at ease in this Portugal side right now. And perhaps that is an element of playing at a slightly lower level, having to work a little bit less in order to prove himself week in, week out. We talked about the fact that when Messi won the World Cup, he'd actually spent a lot of last season or the season, you know, prior to it, either injured or being kind of used sparingly at points by PSG. And actually it meant that when he got to the World Cup, he was in a really, really good way, both physically and ready to take that mantle on. And I'd imagine there's something similar coming when we get to this summer for Cristiano Ronaldo, who is still playing, you know, and playing at a decent level, but also has probably taken the onus off himself to be playing right at the top level week in, week out. And I suppose that's probably a scary concept for the teams that he's going to come up against. But I mean, I agree. I think, look, we're going to talk about coefficients and we're going to talk about the way that different leagues are regarded in different ways when we're talking about the Golden Boot in Europe. And I think that the Saudi coefficient would still remain relatively low considering the way that the league is ranked within world football. But you can't deny that he's gone there and he's done what he said he was going to do. And that's all you can do sometimes.
Absolutely, yeah. And now we've got the official confirmation too that he is going to play against Messi. February the 1st, mate. The unmissable game, isn't it? Al Nassr v Inter Miami.
I will be missing it.
Sadly, I mean, I will be watching it because of Dylan. Like, that is the game of his dreams. But
my last dance was when they were both playing for Real Madrid and Barcelona. I've refused to watch them in match-ups since.
Well, as we said before, we might
get... Unless there's that finalissima, in which case...
Yeah, exactly. We need that game, man. We need that game.
Okay. All right. I want to talk about something slightly different from my things we love. And actually, it starts on quite a sad note, because on Sunday, there was a game between Granada and Athletic Club, and it was interrupted after 17 minutes due to the death of a Granada fan in the stands, Antonio Trujillo. And it was incredibly sad. The Athletic goalkeeper was the man who came up and notified the ref. There were both teams' physios and medical staff went to the stands to try and help out. But in the end, Trujillo very sadly passed away. And they announced that the game had been suspended. And on Monday night, they restarted the game from the 17th minute with Athletic Club 1-0 up. But before they did resume play, there were some really lovely tributes. And this is it. I think that sometimes we forget about what the lifeblood of football is. And not only did Granada captain Victor Diaz go up and lay a wreath on the seat that Trujillo has had for so many years, but the club put a shirt with his membership number and his name on the back of the seat. They've taken away the actual bit so nobody can actually sit on it. It's going to remain like that for the rest of the season, you imagine. But also Athletic captain Iker Muniain also went up and laid a tribute on behalf of Athletic. The Granada players all wore T-shirts bearing his name as well. And then his wife came out and spoke to Geraldo. And the line she used, and this is actually the line that I love, she said, "My husband would have signed up to dying at Los Carmenes." It really made me laugh. It really made me laugh. But it was also tinged with such, you know, emotion and sadness, but also this kind of sense that, you know, Trujillo had been diagnosed with cancer. And whilst they thought they were able to, you know, to deal with it and it was going to be some time before he passed away, she said that he always said, like Granada, he would fight until he died. Said he went to every game with a lot of hope, a season ticket for years since before they got promoted to La Liga. He never missed a game, even in the rain, was I think the line she used, which did make me smile, especially those of you that know Andalusia, it doesn't rain very much. So it's rain. I think it does change the looks of things a little bit. But I just thought that the tributes to it and the way that it was handled by the two clubs was really, really beautiful. And I love the moments you get in football sometimes when the clubs understand exactly what supporters mean to them. Can you imagine something like this yes, there would be sadness in the Premier League, but you can't imagine the clubs leading tributes, every player wearing a shirt on top of it. There is something very special about the way that this was handled at Granada, and I think that they deserve all credit for that. Obviously, rest in peace to Antonio, but as his wife said, this is probably the way he would have wanted to go out, and that was quite tragically beautiful in his own kind of sense, I thought. A nice moment coming from a dark moment, if you will, and when sometimes football does things like this very well, and Athletic, we know, are a club that handle things generally pretty well in terms of the way that they look after their supporters, the way that they get people involved. So for them to be the opponents as well was probably quite a nice touch in that regard. And with that, I think it's probably time for us to move on to the main segment. So we're going to be talking the European Golden Boot after the break. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC, where it's time for our main segment. We're going to be looking at the players currently leading the race for the European Golden Boot, or the European Golden Shoe, as it's sometimes known. This comes because it was originally a French term, soulier d'or, which was translated, and it doesn't really translate perfectly. So it's actually got two names, which is interesting. But just before we do it, I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about, one, the way that it works, and two, the history of this trophy, because it's very, very interesting and at times incredibly funny. The European Golden Boot was basically inaugurated in around 1968, or around that kind of period. I think it was the 1967-1968 season, and it was given out by L'Équipe, kind of in conjunction with Adidas, who produced the trophy, and UEFA. So everyone was pretty happy and everyone was ticking along, winning. I think Eusebio won the first one. And from there, there's some big names who went on and won it. Gerd Müller won it a couple of times. Ian Rush won it. Marco van Basten won it. Lots of different elements to the way that it's been won down the years. But it got paused for a little while after 1991. And that's because in 1991, Darko Panchev, who played for Red Star Belgrade, or Sveta Zvezda, as they are now known, won this with 34 goals. And the Cypriot FA complained and said that there was a player in the Cypriot leagues who'd scored 40 goals and that he should be awarded the trophy. There was no proof of this at the time. So they left the war with Panchev and they actually went, nah, you're all right. We're going to stop this. This is all getting very, very confusing. That's not the maddest thing that's happened. There was a year in 1987 where there was a proper scrap for the trophy. So Anton Polster played for Austria Vienna and he scored 33 times in 31 games. It was between Austria Vienna and Rapid Vienna for the title in Austria. And over in Romania, in Bucharest, basically Steaua Bucharest had already won the league. They were 10 points clear of their great rivals, Dinamo Bucharest. And in Romania, as within a lot of the clubs in that region of the world, a lot of the teams represent a specific industry or a specific kind of part of the government. So Steaua were the club of the army and Dinamo were the Ministry of Internal Affairs. Okay. And basically, after the fact that they were like, well, there's no way that we're going to catch Steaua, they had a player up front called Rodion Kamataru. And he scored something like 23 goals in the last 11 games to catch Polster and overtake him for the Golden Boot. And at this point, Polster was like, this is a sham. This bloke has scored like 5 goals in every game for the last 4 weeks. And they weren't even winning all these games. They were losing them 6-5. Absolute chaos reigning. Anyway, it came up to the point. Kamaratu won the trophy. You know, and look, I don't think there's any sense in many ways that Polster's was all perfect either. Obviously, there were different kind of elements to the two clubs in Vienna and the Rapid fans who were pretty convinced that the Austria-Vienna team were being backed by the government kept being like, it's a circus and waving their own shoes at him in the middle of this. Anyway, Kamaratu wins the trophy, goes to Monaco. Polster refuses to go and get second place. He turns up, and so the trophy remains in Romania. Adidas then have to come out and produce a separate trophy, which they give to Polster, and the official award has been given to him. But anyway, so basically the history is full of madness and all this kind of mad sense of what's right and what's wrong, which leagues matter, which leagues don't, why, you know, a team from playing in the Welsh First Division has won the trophy before, but in today's parlance probably couldn't. And that comes from the coefficient system. So as we go into this, it's probably worth knowing that the top five leagues in Europe, which are the Premier League, Serie A, La Liga, the Bundesliga and Ligue 1, get a coefficient of 2 points for every goal scored in the league, and only league goals count in the European Golden Boot race. The next, I think it's nine leagues, 6 to 15, all have a coefficient of 1.5. So the goals from those divisions are times by 1.5. And then down at the bottom, the kind of minnow leagues of Europe, those coefficients are all one. It basically means that someone scoring goals in the Bundesliga isn't being given the same amount of credence as someone scoring goals in, say, Norway, in the elite Serie A. And then in turn, those goals aren't given the same credence as something someone playing in perhaps the Welsh first tier. So that's where we get to. And that's the way that the thing shakes out. And with that, we can probably start to look at the top 10.
you've set the bar there,
the
mate.
The scene's there. The scene is
yeah,
there.
Yeah, the scene is all set yours. For sure. Yeah, you've done well. Yeah, basically, if you're playing in a top league, you get 2 points. And that's good because obviously it makes the higher leagues hold more value, which is what they want to try to make this. They want to make it so that your goal scored in a higher ranked league counts for more than those scored in a weaker league. So that if Messi did go and score goals in the Welsh league, that he would have to score a lot more than he normally would to win this award.
Well, double, basically.
Basically, yeah. Which is very feasible. But anyway, we're going to basically address the top 10. I mean, the ranking, amazingly, it's taken care of us, mate. The ranking is there. It's a real life thing. But we'll dress it up. We'll show you exactly how it's opening up at this stage of the season from 10 to 1. We'll race through the first five and then address the top five properly. But then we'll kind of talk about how this might pan out and who we would expect to perhaps push themselves into this discussion. As it stands at number 10 right now, I'll take care of this one, Santiago Jimenez of Feyenoord. This is a player who has really burst onto the scene this season, really. I mean, he's become a lot better known. In fact, this week, as Feyenoord go to play Celtic, I understand a lot of scouts are going to be watching this one from Premier League clubs. It's an easy scouting mission for them, of a player who has, well, all the talent and all the traits to actually do really well in England. He started all 15 games so far for Feyenoord this season. And he scored in 11 of those matches. He's very consistent. He's got two hat-tricks along the way, one of which was against Ajax. He's really strong. He's also really fast. And he's got...
That sounds really basic, but it's true.
It's so true. But yeah, they are literally the two traits that stand out to you straight away. And it's not like he'll just hang around the box. He's not like, I don't want to say Haaland hangs around the box, but he's not like Haaland. He's not like that sort of footballer. He's got more to him because, well, yeah, he does get the scruffy goals and the nice goals inside the box. He's also like, he does his own legwork and will often like break away from the halfway line. He loves to cut inside onto his left. And he's just got a real array of ways to get to goal. I think it's a really interesting player. I've loved watching it. I've only been watching him for a few months now, but he's certainly come to my radar, especially because I'm a transfer correspondent in most of my job, and so many clubs have been starting to look towards him. Tottenham, West Ham, Fulham, Newcastle, Chelsea, all of these teams linked recently. And the more you watch of him, the more you see why. Like, this guy... he's kind of made for the Prem, if I'm honest. Like, I think he'd make the switch pretty seamlessly. I don't know if he goes in Jan. I don't know if I want him to go in Jan. I think I kind of want to see what he can do here across the whole season at Feyenoord. But yeah, really, really good player.
Yeah, I really like him too. He's a very, very special kind of footballer in that he brings pretty much everything to the party. And we talked a lot over the last few years about complete number nines and kind of the emergence of Erling Haaland as the benchmark, if you will, for what a number nine should be able to do. Obviously, not everyone is going to reach that, and there are going to be different styles, but a lot of people have looked to that kind of all-encompassing player to make a make a difference at the top of the pitch. And Santi Jimenez is that in many ways. He has a lot of the attributes that Haaland has, obviously in a less kind of nuanced way. He's only a year younger than Erling Haaland, and he hasn't had this meteoric rise to the very, very top of the game in the same way. But he has developed into a bit of a goal-scoring machine, I think, for Feyenoord. 18 goals in 15 appearances. Obviously, they don't count for this because it is only league goals, but 2 in 3 in the Champions League as well, where I think he's been impressive. And actually, you kind of look to that now and what's going to happen in this next bit. And we see whether Feyenoord end up in the Champions League late stages. That's yet to play. By the time that you're listening to this, you will probably know. But whether they're going to be in the Champions League or the Europa League, he has a chance to make a statement on a European level, I think, in the second half of this season. So I'm with you. I hope he stays. I hope he makes that moment his own and therefore gets a move that perhaps he deserves, as opposed to one he's kind of forced into in the January window. Mm. But especially with Feyenoord chasing down PSV, now it's probably going to be too much. That lead is incredible. What PSV have done in the Eredivisie this season has been remarkable. But if they have any hope of chasing them down, Jimenez has to stay and he has to remain as the focal point of this attack. And I think what we've seen from him so far suggests that he absolutely will be. It takes us nicely onto the player level with him, Dean. Who is
Yeah, 27 points, both of these players, by the way,
Vangelis Pavlidis is at RZ Alkmaar. He's a little bit older than Jimenez, and he's also been doing this for a little bit longer. This is not a surprise. He's also on 18 goals in the Eredivisie so far. And what we've seen from him this year in an RZ side that have fallen off a little bit from where they were last year. They're still up and around the European places, but Pavlidis is someone who has now started to remain consistent at this level, and I think is definitely someone that people are going to have an eye on. He was the player that I wanted to replace Alexander Mitrovic at Fulham in the summer. You know, he's also got 3 goals in 5 Conference League games, same rate, scoring 18 and 15 in the Eredivisie as Jimenez. So a really clever footballer, someone who is that physical presence in the box. And look, this is going to be something that we see across the course of this. There are fewer players, I think, these days who have the ability to do things in a slightly different way. And that's the way that football works in cycles, right? We went through a period where everybody on this list at one point seemed to be a wide forward coming inside and scoring a lot of goals. And I think the way that the game shifts and continues to evolve, and obviously is cyclical as well, we're seeing a lot more emphasis now on goal scoring number nines. And you'll see that through the course of the players we run through here. But Pavlidis is another one who I think has probably the potential for a summer move to a top five league. He has shown what he can do over the last 2-3 seasons. It took a little bit of time for his career to get off the mark. He sort of bounced around in various different places for a long time. He was part of Borussia Dortmund's second team, didn't really get that opportunity to shine in the first team. He went off to Bochum, then he went off to Willemsvi, which is where this all started to really explode. And from there, he joined RZ, and his market value has absolutely rocketed since then. And that's because he's just scored goals consistently from the moment he really started to get into this team. And RZ lost a lot of key players in the summer. We saw the likes of Jesper Karlsson leave. We saw the likes of Tijani Reinders obviously join AC Milan. We saw Milos Kerkez head off to Bournemouth. There was a lot of shifting around of the way that team worked, and they were very good last year. The one thing that hasn't dropped off whatsoever is his goal-scoring ability. And I think this is a name you're going to be hearing around, not necessarily the biggest clubs, but maybe the tier below that for some time this summer.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I haven't seen as much of this guy, but I've heard you talk about him before. So that's good. As you say, like, he's got 18 goals on a 1.5 coefficient, exactly the same as Santi Jimenez. So they're basically tied in 9th and 10. But the next guy up, he's just slightly ahead of him, isn't he?
Yeah, he's on 0.5 more of a coefficient right now than the two players from the Eredivisie below him. And this is Andrej Ilić. He is a Serbian striker who plays for a Norwegian club in the shape of Vålerenga. He joined them this summer from RFS in Latvia. So he's scored the first part of his goals across the Latvian summer season and the second part of his goals, you know, across the second half of the Norwegian season, which wrapped up in December. Ilić is an interesting player. He's 23 years old. he's a bit like a kind of rawer, less technically gifted version of Nicholas Fulkrug. He's massive, absolutely huge, a real aerial threat. He scored a lot of goals in those kind of areas and someone who likes to get shots off and get into the mix of things. He's not particularly mobile. He's not particularly good at pressing. He's not the kind of player that I think is making a jump to a top league anytime very soon. There are too many limitations in his game. What he is good at, though, is putting the ball in the back of the net. And he deserves great credit for forcing his way into this list across two different teams. Obviously, the league in Latvia is actually only a one coefficient. It's the 1.5 when he's moved to Norway that's bumped him up this list. Mm-hmm. But an interesting bloke, Ilic. I don't think that we're going to see too much more of a ceiling on this. And also, he's the first player who will 100% drop out of this top 10 because his season is done. He is finished in terms of the way that it's going to play out. He won't play again until the Norwegian season kicks off again in 2024. And that will go into next season's European Golden Shoe. So we won't see Ilic in here at the end, but shout out to him for getting in at this early stage. He's going to be the first of what we call clubhouse leaders. He's posted his mark and now he's waiting for other people to get above him.
Yeah, fair play to him. And you should enjoy this moment in this list too. Like, print it out, stick it on the fridge, because you are surrounded by some very nice names. You can show your grandkids one day. Two of the names above him are two that you should be most excited to be in the company of. And I'm actually going to kind of wrap these into one, because we've got Erling Haaland at number 7 on the list and we've got Lautaro Martinez at number 6 in the list. And both of these players have 14 goals. They're both on a 2 coefficient, so they've both got 28 points. And look, let's be honest, I think by the time we get to the back end of this season, we can expect that these two might be 1 and 2. Like, there's that potential, like, certainly given the way that you expect both of these sides, Inter Milan and Man City, to do in the second half of the season. Erling Haaland won this trophy last season. He is the reigning Golden Boot winner. And so far this season, he has 14 goals in 15 matches. Now, at this stage of last season, he had 18 goals. So, bearing in mind that last season, at this point, he did also have 3 hat-tricks. There's not a huge drop-off here. I think when you consider what Haaland's season has been like so far, it feels like, he's not quite as good as he was last year. I'm not quite as scared of him anymore, and this and that. And it's like, that might be true to some, in some respects that might be true. And obviously he's got an injury at the moment, but not far off it. He's really not far off it. If he'd got one hat trick, like 1 week when he didn't score, which from Haaland you can go 0 to 3 very quickly, he would be on exactly the same numbers as he was last season when he actually won the Golden Shoe. So let's bear that in mind, that he's also in the second half of the season likely to have Kevin De Bruyne linking up with him again. Let's remember what the De Bruyne-Haaland combination can be like. And if we do see a De Bruyne coming back to life in the Club World Cup, which takes place in a couple of weeks, and Haaland then starting to get fit as well, yeah, that combo in the second half of the season could really ignite. And then Lautaro, well, he also has 14 in 15 games. He's also got the captain's armband at Inter. He is the guy that fires them to the Scudetto if they get there this season. He's changed his game up a bit more this season. He's more of a 9 than he's probably ever been before, as far as I'm concerned. The types of goals he's scoring, the types of movements, the type of positions. He went 3 games without a goal at one point. But last season, it wasn't uncommon for him to go 5 games in Serie A without a goal. So there seems to have been a bit of a shift there from what we've seen so far. Lautaro is so nice to watch. Like, he's just a beautiful footballer. Like, his touches, his movements, his brain is just, he's so smart, man. And his instinct for goal is ridiculous. A brilliant marksman, as you might call him. He's about to sign a new deal at Inter Milan, which potentially means he doesn't play anywhere else in his career. This could be it. He could be committing himself here. There's been interest from other leagues before. No one's ever taken the plunge and gone for Lautaro. Teams like Chelsea who considered it, and you look where they are right now, and you look what Lautaro Martinez is doing, I think they might have made a mistake. This guy is pretty special, and he's 6 right now, and yeah, he'll be in the top 5 come the end of the season, I'd imagine.
Yeah, especially the way that Inter are playing. I think that it's hard to look around Europe and see a team in better form than Inter are right now. They are cooking so nicely. And actually, what I really love about Lautaro this season, the way that his goal-scoring exploits have continued to thrive, is that he's playing with a new partner. Obviously, last year, he played a lot of the time with Edin Dzeko and with Romelu Lukaku, played around those players. Both of those left the club in the summer. Obviously, Marcus Thuram came in. So did Arnautovic. And he's sort of just not skipped a beat. He's had two new players around him. He's playing off a different kind of style of player in Thuram, who's not quite the same type of player as either Dzeko or Lukaku is. And instead, we've got this sense that Lautaro was just like, don't worry about it. I got it. And the way that he exploded into this season was absolutely remarkable. I don't doubt for a second that he will end up in the top five here. He has been sensational. Inter are absolutely brilliant and couldn't agree more with everything else you just said.
Brilliant. Then to the top five we go then. And a player you've probably heard of before at five, his name is Kylian Mbappe. 15 goals, a coefficient of two. So he has 30 points right now. Look, when you consider the last three seasons in goal hauls in Ligue 1 for Mbappe, you're looking at 29, 28 and 27. I think this is the season I'm expecting a 30 from Mbappe. He's certainly looking on course for that. At this stage of the season, he's got one hat trick and four braces along the way. What I would say is, of this list we're going through, I think Mbappe is actually the best footballer. He's certainly the most exciting player on this list. Even if he doesn't end up scoring the most goals, I think he is the most entertaining goal scorer in the world. The way that this guy goes and gets his goals is different from the way that everybody else is going to do it. I can assure you of that. He's flamboyant. He's elegant, yet he's also tenacious. His style of goal scoring, yeah, isn't really like the number nines you might see, say, Lautaro or Haaland. Like, he's not like them. And a goal for Mbappe doesn't really feel complete unless in the build-up to it, one of the defenders is, like, left on his backside somewhere. Like, you usually look back and he's, like, left behind a trail of destruction and he's, like, twisted people up or skinned them and gone past them with his step-overs or a little Cruyff turn. Whatever it is, an Mbappe goal doesn't really feel complete unless he's twisted somebody up in knots along the way. That is a general rule of thumb I now have with Mbappe, unless it's a header or a pen, which he's also very good at as well, handily. He plays very much like Thierry Henry used to play. People have been compared to greats in the past and often failed to live up to the hype. Mbappe not doing that. He really is playing like Henry used to play. Obviously, is preferring a life out wide rather than going through the middle. Let's see whether that continues. At the moment, we've got another transfer saga talked about with Real Madrid. We're so bored of this. We just want to see it happen or not happen. But we'll be back again in the new year when the January transfer window opens, and that will build up towards the summer, I'm sure. So that might provide a little twist as to whether Mbappe steps things up or, in fact, maybe it hinders his goal-scoring rate. Who knows? But yeah, currently, Kylian Mbappe of PSG is at number five. And as I say, got to be the best one to watch out the lot.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. It's just such a flair and a flourish about the way that he scores goals. And look, we've seen some absolutely sensational ones this year already. The goal for France against the Netherlands, just absolutely ridiculous. And I think you're right. He is different to almost everyone on this list. And actually, it goes back to that point we were making, right, about how many players who actually are out-and-out wingers or wide forwards. You would probably put Mbappe in that category. Lautaro is a little bit different from some of the number nines in that he often operates as kind of a shadow striker. But we're talking about, you know, just to go through the top 10, Pavlidis, centre-forward, Jimenez, centre-forward, Ilic, centre-forward, Martinez, shadow striker, centre-forward, Haaland, centre-forward, Mbappe. And actually, as we go through this, we're going to see a lot more names at the top of this list who are also centre-forwards. The fact he's on here from a different position just shows the caliber that we're talking about, and also shows that kind of sense that if you can get things right, wide forwards are still an incredibly exciting presence in this list, even if the game has shifted a little bit from them being the dominant goal scorers in their teams.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. Yeah, it's a very strange one, isn't it? But it's providing us with something a little different to watch, I think, as we head towards the second stage of this season. And that's why, you know, honestly, we were looking at a ranking to do this week. This really did feel perfect to kind of gauge exactly where we're at right now. And ultimately the thing we all want to see defined as we get to this point of a campaign is who are the favourites to win things? Who are the guys that are standing out as the players of the season? And ultimately, a lot of that stuff is defined by the guys that are in this list. And like you say, they don't all play in the same way. Let's get on to number four, because this guy has made an absolute splash this season. Serhou Guirassy of Stuttgart has got 16 goals so far this season in the Bundesliga. He's on a coefficient of 2, so he's got 32 points. He's been absolutely brilliant. He's 27 years old, and barely anybody could have expected such a prolific scoring run to stick him at the front of the goal-scoring race like he has done. He's right up among big names here, and you definitely wouldn't have predicted that, but he 100% deserves all of these goals. He got a brace in Stuttgart's first game of the season against Bochum, and he's never really relented apart from when he had a little injury layoff. He scored a couple of great hat-tricks, one against Mainz and one against Wolfsburg. At one point, he surpassed a Robert Lewandowski record that had been written for the first goal, the amount of goals scored in the opening stages of a season, as Guirassy was at, I think he stood at 11 goals in 7 games. And like, it's just an amazing start to the campaign. And even as he's come back from injury, his goal scoring exploits have continued. He's got interesting competition for his spot, because he actually has Undav there, who actually is scoring at a relatively decent amount himself. So Guirassy is like not the only goal source within this team, and he has to make sure he's on form or he's not guaranteed a spot. But yeah, he is brilliant. I think that the way he scores goals is pretty cool too, to be honest. I mean, he's got this lovely fake in his locker that he's used a few times to floor defenders and then stick one away, like a proper fake. And you don't see it that often anymore. Like, I remember in kids' football, or you see it in five-a-side quite often, where you do a dummy and everyone falls for it and is completely like flat-footed or falls over. And Guirassy does that. Like, he's done it a fair few times already this season, completely thrown people. He's also got the power to just smash one, like he can really hit a ball. But what I like is the inventiveness he's got to his finishing. There's been a couple that you're just like, wow. Like, he's just come up with that type of finish on the spur of the moment, thrown into that situation to somehow get that ball past the goalkeeper. And he's done it. Also, away from the goals, his movements around the box, they're sublime. Like, when he's looking for space, he finds it such an excellent way. I really like, I've started to just watch the way that he opens up spaces around the box. It's brilliant. I mean, he's so full of confidence at the moment. Obviously, he's getting linked with a transfer in the January window. He's got a release clause, which means that at the moment, he does actually look attainable. I'm sure that Stuttgart are doing all they can to prevent that. But from his point of view, I can also understand why he might want to strike while the iron's hot. Because as I say, he is 27, and there are a few teams out there who are short of goals and would love a guy that's feeling like this right now. And yeah, Serhou Guirassy, one of the big stars of this season so far.
Here's a hot take. If he leaves Stuttgart, I don't think he ends up in the top five in this list. I mean, I think there's a chance he doesn't end up in the top five in this list full stop. But
yeah.
If he leaves, I think he definitely doesn't. Something that we've seen throughout his career is it does take a little bit of time for him to get used to a new place and actually to settle into different environments. And that's not been something that's troubled with him. Now, he's obviously not been in the form that he's in right now when he's made these moves beforehand. But there is a sense that sometimes those kind of moves can derail him until he finds his feet again. So I think actually the best thing for him might be to stay. Obviously, Stuttgart third in the Bundesliga right now. They're through into the latter stages of the DFB Pokal as well. There's a real opportunity for this side to do something quite special, especially when you put into context that they were in the relegation playoff last season. They survived in the Bundesliga by the skin of their teeth. And the way that they've started this season has been truly, truly remarkable. He's been sensational. And as you say, without that injury layoff, is he even higher in this list? I think the answer is yes. When he's got someone feeling like this and you're playing this way, I actually really like the understanding he has with Undav. And you're right. Obviously, Undav has stepped into that centre-forward role when Jurassic was injured. Now he's back. Undav's sort of drifted a little bit further wide. He's playing from a slightly different, more reserved right-hand side role and still being part of a very, very good attack. So I like the kind of synergy that's going on at Stuttgart at the moment. I really like Jurassic as an all-round player, although I do think this is a hot hand. I think that there is an element here that we're seeing him overperform what he would do perhaps elsewhere, but that's also fine. That's not a problem. That's when you're scoring goals like this, you enjoy the runs you go on, and he's having a hell of a season. Fair play to him.
He is, mate, yeah. But as good as his season's been, he's behind somebody who I've got to admit, mate, I know nothing about.
Yeah, so three in the list is Amal Pellegrino, who plays for Bodø Glimt in Norway. Now, this is another one of those what we call clubhouse leaders, right? His season is done. Bodø Glimt won the league in Norway. He finished as top scorer with 24 goals. And it was a very, very good campaign. Pellegrino plays an interesting role. He's not an out-and-out number nine. He plays sort of as a shadow striker, sometimes off the left. And what I love about Pellegrino is that every goal he seems to score seems to be glorious. He is a scorer of great goals. And I think that when you score 24 in a season and like eight of them are Puskás contenders, you're talking about, you know, a player who's got something very special in his locker. Now, I know there was interest from Ajax a couple of years back when they sold Steven Bergwijn to Tottenham the first time. I know there's been interest in him before, but at 33, and with Bodø Glimt obviously still in European competition as we speak right now, there's probably no reason for him to leave. Now, he's in his home country. He's at a club that absolutely adores him. He is very much seen as the main man as part of that setup. And in a club where a lot of players have moved on in recent years, you know, we saw Ole Solbakken head off to Roma to try and make his fortune. That's not really what I mean, but you know what I mean. So Pellegrino has remained as a kind of constant in this Bodø side, as they have kind of risen to a very respectable level in the European game. They're a side that a lot of people fear. We saw them batter Celtic a few years ago in the Europa League. They've been a really, really big success story. And considering his age and considering his profile, I can't see him moving anywhere, you know, at this point in his career, which means that this is him done. His 24 goals are going to be all he scores this season. And you'd imagine that those 36 points are not going to be enough to bank him a top 10 or a top five spot, maybe a top 10 spot, but definitely not a top five spot come the end of the season. But a glorious player, a real joy. And I know there's been a lot of consternation in Norway about the fact that he's not received that call up to the national team, especially in the last international break when we saw Erling Haaland injured. A lot of people calling for his goals and his kind of versatility to be part of the setup. That didn't happen, but he's a lovely footballer to watch. I'm going to hope that Bodø are in the second half of European competition so that we get to see more of him. And yeah, just an incredible season. So his highlight reel is so worth your time. I can't explain it. He just scores beautiful strikes all the time. A really, really nice footballer. And yeah, shout out Amal Pellegrino. Will not be in the top five come the end of this season.
Yeah, honestly, I actually just recommend that everybody just goes through this list tonight, tomorrow morning, at the weekend, whenever you're just bored and you're sat there on YouTube. Just go through and pick some of these players we're talking about that seem to excite you as we're talking about them, and go through their goals, whether it's Guirassy, Pellegrino, whoever, because it's great, man. Like I was going through this last night. Dylan was taking ages to fall asleep, and I'm like, okay, right, I'm just going to sit here and watch YouTube goals. And I went through all these players. It was so great, mate. I mean, he'd been asleep about half hour, and I still just laid there watching goals, because it just became like brilliant to just compare the stylings of their finishes and stuff like that. It was cool. That moves me on though, mate. We're back to the two coefficient here. Death, taxes, Harry Kane scoring goals. Never changes. He's in at number two at Bayern Munich. He's got 18 goals, sticks him on 36 points right now. The biggest surprise, I guess, to Harry Kane is that he's not number one. He became Bayern's record signing when he joined them from Tottenham. They wanted somebody that could be back to mimicking what Robert Lewandowski used to do for them. He's done that, and he's probably even going to be better than that. He's an absolute master of slipping off the shoulder of his man. That was really the thing. As I'm sitting there watching Harry Kane's goals from across this season, and I'm just watching like the chances he's presented with. I'm like, it's like he's invisible. The way he slips away from
people. He's been learning from Thomas Müller.
He might have got even better at this. Because he'll either just like slide away from someone or drop off them while the defender just watches the ball for a second. And you watch the ball land at his feet and it all looks so simple. It almost, it's like he's just hanging around in the right areas. But that is an art in itself that Harry Kane has just absolutely mastered. He's brilliant. It's a guarantee that he tops the goal scoring charts in Germany this season unless he gets injured. Like, he is already the most prolific Englishman in a single Bundesliga season. So he's overtaken the likes of Kevin Keegan and Jadon Sancho for that. We all know like his finishing preferences and the way that he likes to score goals, that kind of ruthless, it's kind of like a driven side foot that he likes to use at times. He's got those superb penalties as well that he doesn't seem to miss very often at all, unless it's a really important one for England. But we also know that Harry Kane's got even more to his game than just the goals, and he's been doing that too. Look, I'll actually be stunned if he doesn't win the Golden Shoe, if I'm honest. But given the way that things are going on a team basis for him right now at Bayern Munich, who knows? As I said on Patreon on Monday, like, this would be the most Kane-y thing ever. He's joined Bayern Munich. They always win trophies. At the moment, there's no guarantee.
They lost the Super Cup in August. They were knocked out of the DFB Pokal by Saarbrücken. And they're, 4 points behind by Leverkusen at the top of the Bundesliga. They do have a game in hand.
They just lost 5-1 at the weekend. Bayern don't lose 5-1.
Apart from Frankfurt, apparently, which is not the first time this has happened.
Not the first time, yeah. So you never know. It might actually... If Kane ends up potless at Bayern Munich, mate, then, as I say, maybe he is cursed. And that would actually overshadow anything he does manage to achieve on a personal level, because he's been brilliant. He's made this switch seamlessly. And I've been so impressed by it. And yeah, Harry Kane is just a master at work.
He's not top of this list, though. And what's interesting about the player who's top is that he has a head start. So Akol Adams joined Montpellier this summer from Lillestrøm in Norway. And he scored 15 goals in 15 Eliteserien appearances in Norway before he moved to Ligue 1. And so what that means is that he has a 22.5 head start on everybody else in the top five European leagues. And now he has a full season to back it up. He is second in the Ligue 1 goal scoring charts with 7 goals for Montpellier. He's only behind Kylian Mbappe in that list. But the head start does give him a really interesting advantage in this, because it means that he's basically, what we're saying, 11 goals already ahead of anyone else compared. So if he scores 10 less than Mbappe, he'll finish above him in the golden boot race, which is really interesting. And look, I really like Akol Adams, right? This was an interesting signing in the summer. They signed him to replace El Yawahi, who obviously moved on. He's a really, really complete forward. And I really like him. He's massive. He's also rapid. His pressing game is exceptional. The way that he drops off and links play, really, really neat as well. And, you know, Montpellier side, who, you know, after a while bouncing between divisions and who had struggled to survive in Ligue 1, they kicked on last year and it looks like they're kicking on again to be another, you know, comfortable mid-table finish. Suddenly you're a bit like, ooh, if he's the main man, he's on pens, he's the man who they're looking for to lead the line across the course of this season, the main goal-scoring threat, is there a chance that he's right in this conversation at the end of the season? Now, I don't necessarily think he'll win it, but I think he might well be up there, because as a striker, 23 years old as well, someone who's really got the prime of their career ahead of them, someone that everyone should be keeping an eye on, because I think that there is maybe the presence, maybe not to be quite at the very top of the game. I don't think he's going to be starting for Manchester City anytime soon. But I think there are a lot of teams in that sort of challenging Champions League, winning Europa League kind of tier below, who Akol Adams could well end up being a key player for. And look, it's another Nigerian striker doing absolute bits. Obviously, saw Osimhen do it in Ligue 1. Yeah. He's spoken about the fact that the players he watched in Ligue 1 growing up were the ones that have inspired him. And I just think as a kind of an all-round centre forward with no obvious flaws to his game right now in an attacking sense, there's a lot here to be shaped over the next couple of years that could turn Akur Adams into another absolute top of the game striker for Nigeria.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. What I would also say, thanks for wrapping that up and doing such a good summary of the number one of a player that I'm not sure how many of our listeners have actually heard of before now. So there you go. We've all learned something today. Akur Adams is the best goal scorer in Europe, according to this. But he's not going to have it all his own way, not just because of the competition within the top 10, but even outside of the top 10, there are some lurkers that are preparing to do more damage. I'll throw in number 11 as a contender, Jude Bellingham, who might be known as a midfielder, but is very fast becoming a centre forward. At Real Madrid, he's got 12 goals, which sticks him on 24 points. So that's 3 points behind Santi Jimenez, who makes up the top 10. Bellingham, as we all know, has been absolutely outrageous this season. And some like experts, and by experts, I mean like pundits who are strikers, I'm hearing more and more talk about the fact that they believe Bellingham could be one. He could be a centre forward if he wants to. Now, I prefer the way that he drifts into spaces from the position he is right now. And like he runs off the shoulder, he runs into space. Even if he doesn't receive the ball is great because it opens up channels for whoever's on the ball at the time to dart into. But Bellingham can basically be whatever he wants to be. And in the second half, he'll definitely be in this top 10. I don't know how far up, but I fancy it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still not completely convinced that this is not sustainable because I think that...
Really?
What I'm not saying is that I think if Jude Bellingham continued to play in this exact role for the entire season, I think you're probably right. But I think at some point, Madrid will look for a little bit more control and just that ability to shift the way and the dynamic of the way that the team works. And we've seen it a little bit already in the game where Brahim Diaz played in the 10 and they dropped Bellingham a little bit back into slightly further back in the diamond in order to try and get more out of him in those kind of senses. So I'm not completely convinced that Carlo will stick with this for the entire season. But if he does, I think there's a good chance that Bellingham's in here. What I've loved is watching that kind of development of the way that he runs onto the ball. We've seen not only those box crashing runs that people have compared to someone like Frank Lampard, where he's able to get on the end of things and make a difference, but also kind of defense splitting runs where he kind of goes through the middle of the center halves, kind of collects the ball like an off the shoulder striker and puts them away. And the changes from that, from what we saw at Borussia Dortmund, is pretty stark. Look, I think what we're talking about here is a player who's so complete that he could almost do whatever you need him to in almost any position on the pitch. And that's pretty remarkable for a 20-year-old. But whether his best strengths are utilised by being a number nine, maybe they are. Look, maybe they are. We talked about Cristiano Ronaldo as a winger and there was a lot of question marks when he started to play centrally. And they were like, well, are we going to still get the best of him cutting onto that right foot? The answer was yes. He got better. Never mind. Yeah. So I'm not saying that there's no scope for change here, but I wonder if Bellingham's energy and intensity and ability to win the ball back in the middle of the park would probably be less served by the idea of him going and playing as a number nine. So look, we'll have to see how this one develops, but I don't think there's any doubt that Bellingham could almost do whatever he puts his mind to.
Fair enough. So outside of that top 10 and Bellingham, is there anybody else that you think breaks in?
Well, Mohamed Salah is here, currently in 14th, 11 goals, 22 points. I would be surprised if he doesn't end the season at least in the top 10, if not a little bit higher. There's a couple of players below that. Lois Openda has 10 goals in the Bundesliga. I think he's going to keep scoring goals. I really like Openda as a forward, and I think he has everything he needs to succeed, especially in the Bundesliga, which should suit him. And Heung-min Son is level with him if he continues playing as the kind of central striker for Spurs, or out wide, to be honest. It doesn't really matter where you put him. This Spurs side under Ange Postecoglou seems to have unlocked something new in Heung-min Son. I just wanted to give one shout out to Sölvi Vatnahama, who plays for Víkingur in the Faroe Islands. And he is the clubhouse leader and top player in a one-tier league. So every goal he scores is only worth one, as opposed to the two in the top leagues and the 1.5 in that kind of mid-range. He got 21 goals in the Faroese League, and he is basically the top ranking player who's in a league below the top 16. So I just wanted to give him a bit of a shout. 37 years old, still banging him in the Faroe Islands.
Nice. Would have been in like the same era as me, really. So one of my own.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought you'd appreciate an old boy.
Him and Ronaldo and me, mate.
Yeah, exactly. All of you having a nice time. that probably takes us to the end of this ranking. Is there anyone else that you think is catching your eye to make a late dash?
No, mate. I've got another ranking to do.
Okay. All right. Well, we will keep that for part three. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC, where on the back of the success of last week's part three, we are going to keep this segment in for a couple of weeks and see what the response is. The segment is called Guru Wisdom, and Dean is going to be regaling us with some life lessons he's learned in his old age.
Basically, mate, this is just a new take on gibberish, I think. But it's going to need a jingle for sure. It's either going to need a jingle or, I don't know, Dylan and Reese giving me some sort of build up. I'll have to figure it out if it stays. But a lot of people did seem to like last week, which was a bit nonsense. But Life Lessons has been continued into this session of Guru Wisdom. And this week I'm going to talk you through my three drink discoveries of 2023. I think great discoveries, it could be a theme that I go on for the rest of the year, actually. And I'll just hone in on drinks for this week. And I don't mean alcoholic drinks. None of these, in fact, are alcoholic drinks. So this is something that all of us can learn from.
Water.
They're very different drinks.
He's discovered water at 40 years old.
I've always drunk a lot of water. I'm very good at that. I've got a wife who literally drinks liters and liters and liters of it a day, and it's worn onto me. So I've got that one in the bag already, mate. These three drinks I'd never tried this before this year, 100%. But we are cracking on. In fact, I've got right here, nobody else apart from you is going to see this. But at number three, mate, look, Prime. I'm holding a bottle here of lemon and lime Prime. I had managed to totally ignore all the hype around this drink for the first 18 months since its launch, which was in January 2022, right? But in the summer, we were in America, and Dylan saw in a grocery store a whole shelf just full of all the different colours of Prime and stuff. And obviously, he recognises it from YouTube and stuff, and got sucked in by all the colours and the branding. So we were on holiday. I ended up buying him one. He didn't drink it all. It was the orange one. So he didn't drink it all. I was like, well, I'll have it. I thought, actually, that's all right. It's just like orange squash, but it's a bit nicer.
And more expensive.
Yeah, quite enjoyed it. A bit more expensive. Very inoffensive. So I thought, okay, that's fine, whatever. Didn't really think that much more of it. Then about 3 weeks later, off we went to the Emirates. Arsenal played Fulham. And I'm grabbing myself a beer before the game. Dylan looks over the thing and he sees Prime in the fridge. He said, well, I have a Prime. I said, will you? It was a tropical one. It was absolutely disgusting, mate. He had one sip. I thought he was going to cry. He gave it to me. It was disgusting. I'm not having that ever again. I can assure you of that. But since then, I've tried lemon and lime like I've got right now. It's actually a complete coincidence, by the way, that I'm holding this right now. It's just been next to me on the table from one that we had earlier in the week. But actually, the lemon and lime one is my favourite I've had so far. I do prefer it a little bit watered down because it's a bit too sour, bitter, one of those two.
Both,
and for
probably.
Dylan's, yeah, for Dylan's Christmas present, I've actually got him a Glowberry one. I don't know if you know about Glowberry. It's got a remarkable
Glowberry sounds like something out of Willy Wonka's chocolate factory.
Yeah, and it looks amazing, mate. It's like this black bottle with these green bubbles around it. The packaging looks great. I thought, wonder what flavour this is, this Glowberry stuff, which, by the way, I've been searching for and buy it on eBay for about £9 the bottle and all this stuff. I'm not doing that. Anyway, it turns out it's coconut water. It's coconut water inside. That's all it is. I got really lucky the other day. I went into Tesco and they had all this Prime. They had one Globery left. Grabbed it, stuck it in a bag. Dylan's got one of those for Christmas. And Reese is getting a strawberry and watermelon one. So I've got two more flavours to try. Really looking forward to it. Really didn't see this day coming, but I'm a
massive Prime fan.
Massive Prime fan.
Honestly, I do worry about you, but you do have children, so you have an excuse at the very least.
This is the thing I told you the other day. I'm reliving childhood, mate. I'm suddenly playing FIFA every night. I've got new football boots and I'm out playing like three or four times a week. And now I'm drinking Prime. This is brilliant. I'm loving it.
Here he goes. He's young again.
Number two, let's go for a hot drink, shall we? I've talked about this before, actually, on Patreon. I've always had a bit of a thing for a vanilla latte. And there are definitely worse vices to have in life than a vanilla latte. Generally speaking, I think it's probably better than like being addicted to like drugs. They say that vanilla lattes are slightly better for you than going down that rabbit hole. But I'll be honest, if I'm having it like a fair few times a week, it's not great to be having all that sugar in my coffee, and it's pretty unnecessary. I go through stages sometimes where I'd have that every day. I wanted to get away from that. Anyway, I barely ever have a vanilla latte anymore. I don't think I ever will because I have discovered oat milk. And oat milk changes everything when it comes to coffee. I don't know why no one had ever told me about this before. It's got a natural sweetness to it that really complements the taste of the coffee, mate. And it, I'll be honest, it's completely enhanced my overall coffee experience, mate, since I've started having this oat milk in my coffee. I think I did talk previously about the hazelnut oat milk latte that I had. I think I had it one while we were recording once. And it was very nice, but it did get a little sickly and it's probably very seasonal. So I'm going to actually stay away from that. I'm just going to have a straight Americano with oat milk, probably every day, probably for the rest of my life. It's really smooth. It adds a bit of texture, a bit of taste that's a bit different. Look, if you don't like cow's milk, great alternative. Highly recommended, mate. Have you tried it yet since I last mentioned it?
No. It just doesn't do anything. What,
as an influencer?
For me. I'm a real stickler. To be honest, I don't really drink much coffee. It's not really my scene. And it's probably because I don't have children. But it's one of those things that if I'm having a coffee, I go out and have it. It's not very much I don't really make them at home. It's not really something I do. I'm a tea drinker. And in tea, oat milk, almond milk, soy milk is rancid. All of it. It's just that none of it works. It all makes the tea taste funny. I'm very unhappy. And Lucy's a real almond milk girl. And it just makes me feel a bit ill. So basically, I'm going to stick with normal milk. And then when I do have a coffee, I go out and have all of the sugar that you could possibly put in one cup. So it's like, yeah, give me what are you saying, vanilla? I'm a caramel. But double the caramel syrup. I want it sickly. It's sickly sweet. But because I don't drink that much coffee, I haven't taken this the advice yet. But I think at some point in my life, feels like something I'll delve into. And at that point, I will take your advice on board.
Yeah, I hope it rubs off at some point, mate, because guru wisdom is for that. I like to think that all everyone listening to this, the next time they go to order a coffee, I'm going to be just there in the back of their mind saying, Get the oat milk.
That little devil on your shoulder. Right, what's the number one?
Number one is a drink I really don't think I'd heard of a year ago. I'd maybe heard of it, didn't really know what it was. I'll be honest, I'm still not entirely sure what it is. Kombucha.
Yeah, kombucha. You have mentioned this, that it's become a staple of your diet.
It's become a game changer, mate. And do you know why it's become a game changer? And it's because it's a really good alternative to having alcohol. Like, the thing is, like, you get through, I don't know, it might be halfway through a weekend, might be just in the evening as you're knocking off of work or something and starting to unwind, or just might be sat there at night time, whatever it is, and you just get that urge maybe to have a beer or a glass of wine. And I don't know why you necessarily get that, but you do. And it's very hard to replace that urge with, I don't know, a squash or a glass of milk, or sometimes a cup of tea can hit the spot. But typically, the thing that I think I miss if I'm not having alcohol is that little kick, that little bite you get at the back of your throat, just that feeling. And it's very hard to replicate that. But in a good kombucha, I've found it, especially if it's like a ginger one, if it's got a snap of ginger in it as well, you're getting that hit. It's actually really good for you. I mean, I'm not going to go into all the health benefits of it, but it's far healthier than me having a glass of wine. It's good for like your energy levels. It's good for gut health and all these sorts of things that it promotes. But ultimately, the thing I like about it, apart from the fact that it's better for me than beer, you get loads of really good flavors. It's definitely a better alternative to having alcohol every single night. And it's just that option to have, which I've never had in my life before this moment. Now, in America, I think this has been a bigger thing for a longer time. I know that like our friends that live out there, they've known about kombucha for years and they have it and whatever. But I think this year has been the takeoff, mate. And I think I'm going to be a king of kombucha as we move forward. Those of us that drink it actually call it booch. So we're the boochies. And if you'd like to be a boochie, next time you're out and about, see if you can find a bottle or a tin of kombucha. Give it a try. Let me know what you think.
I haven't tried this yet. So I actually I will try it at some point. I think the reason I haven't tried it is because I don't get that urge. When I'm at home or my, like, you know, at the end of a day, I just drink, like, I'm a big water guy, you know, sparkly water. I love a sparkly water. And that's my go-to. If I'm drinking, I'm going out. But I very rarely have a drink at home.
I'll and tell you when it changes,
I think it's because, well, it might be because children. But it more is. Than that, I think there's an element of, because I drink Guinness, and Guinness is just so much better from a tap than it is from a can, et cetera, et cetera. That actually, if I want a pint, I want to go out for it. And so that's maybe the
Again,
difference.
When you have children, you can't do that.
Mm. Well, maybe by that point, I'll have this a Guinness keg thing, in my house.
I'm not even a big drinker at home. I'm not a big drinker anyway. But I don't want to really be someone that drinks at home on their own. I'm really keen to avoid that. So even if it stops me having the odd, I might be happy to have the odd drink at home. Like, it's not going to kill me. But if I can avoid it, I might as well avoid it. If I can, maybe I'm going to mix this, a bit of prime in there as well. If I throw a bit of prime.
And some oat milk. Sounds delicious. There we go. The guru cocktail has been revealed.
Blimey, that did turn into a gibberish.
Exactly. And with that, I think it's probably us time for us to call it a day. So all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to our guru, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins, Knave of Hearts. This has been Ranks FC. We'll be back tomorrow talking all our way through the Champions League, what happened in match day 6, the permutations, who's through to the knockouts, who's into the Europa, all very exciting. And then, of course, we'll have a Friday episode over on our Patreon looking at all the Europa League, Europa Conference League action, and looking forward to the weekend ahead as well. For now, thank you so much for listening as ever, and we'll see you very shortly, Rank Squad. Take it easy. Peace. Final seconds of the game. A chance to score, and the chance has gone begging. If your business's commerce platform keeps missing the target on golden opportunities, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool that you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system, or you're vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.